Thanks for listening to Star Lores. If you like the show, please consider subscribing and giving a 5-star rating and review wherever you listen to podcasts. You can also help us make more great content by becoming a patron at www.patreon.com. We would also love to hear from you on social media. You can follow Star Lores on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Enjoy the show, and may the Force be with you.
You are listening to the Star Lores Podcast.
I find your lack of faith disturbing.
Are you stuck up, half-witted, scruffy-looking nerf herder?
But I was going into Tosche Station to pick up some power converters.
I got a bad feeling about this.
A future written in the stars. There will be heat and death and resurrection. A seed will quicken. Will it burn or shine? Will it think and create or be ruled by fear and destroy? The voice of Qui-Gon in Anakin Skywalker's mind, circa 15 BBY.
Across the eons, many seers have glimpsed the role that Darth Vader would play in the galaxy's destiny. These Force premonitions were seen by Jedi such as Kenelia, Yoda, and even Anakin Skywalker himself. The first known prophecy, of which Vader may be the subject, dates to 12,000 BBY. This and related prophecies about a chosen one were summarized by Jedi historian Teon Solasar.
A Jedi will come to destroy the Sith and bring balance to the Force.
Teon Solasar, circa 40 BBY. The Sith held their own prophecy of a chosen one, the Sith Ahri, who would free themselves of all restrictions and eventually destroy the Order. The destruction would ultimately make them stronger than ever, according to this interpretation. Though many Dark Lords of the Sith believed themselves to be the Sith Ahri, Darth Vader probably fits the prophecy best. Another dark side faction not affiliated with the Order of Sith Lords, the Hindsnake cult, had their own prophecy about a warrior in black armor who would throw the galaxy into chaos. They believe this warrior was Darth Vader. Their soothsaying did not warn them of their own death at the hands of Vader, which is what happened when he met them and learned of their prophecy. As a result of his interactions with the cult, Vader had prophetic visions of his own. He saw himself overthrow his master, Darth Sidious, and the galaxy plunged into chaos afterwards. Parts of the vision, like Palpatine using Force lightning on Vader, only for Vader to eventually defeat his former master, did come true. Whether this was a true vision of a possible future facilitated by the Force, or simply a fantasy of Vader's that was likely to be realized, depends on one's point of view, as an analysis of his psychology will reveal. Likewise, the Sith Ahri prophecy only partly came true, as Vader's tenure as Dark Lord of the Sith was momentary at best. After killing his master Sidious, he relinquished his title, further complicating attempts to conceptualize Vader as the Sith Ahri. Vader was defeated in a duel by his son before killing Darth Sidious. Luke Skywalker did not immediately replace Vader as a Sith Lord. and the Order entered a period of dormancy, having no more living members, and its future incarnations would not attain the level of power reached by Vader and Palpatine. The Miraluka Jedi, Kanilia, had a lesser-known prophecy involving a Sith artifact, the Mura Talisman, around 3900 BBY. The blind Jedi saw how the talisman would go on to affect the lives of Vader, Luke Skywalker, and Darth Vader's descendant, Cade Skywalker. Another Jedi, Shakun, also had a vision of Vader's redemption and of the Jedi Order's recreation.
Sired by Darkness.
Anakin, Chancellor Palpatine is evil! From my point of view, the Jedi are evil! Well, then you are lost!
Darth Vader was conceived in 19 BBY when the former Jedi Knight Anakin Skywalker assumed the infamous nom de guerre at the behest of Darth Sidious. By this time, Sidious had been slowly manipulating Skywalker for years, grooming the vulnerable young man in the fashion of a child predator since time immemorial to fulfill his own twisted desires. Darth Vader was not born as a universal symbol of fear the galaxy knew him as until later that year. On Mustafar, at the conclusion of the Clone Wars, Vader had a vicious duel with his former master, Obi-Wan Kenobi. In this battle, Kenobi sliced off both of Anakin's legs at the knees, then severed his left arm with one expert lightsaber stroke. Kenobi left him for dead on the shore of a river of molten lava, the proximity to which caused massive burns over much of the surface of Anakin's body. Most of these injuries never fully healed. This incident also caused significant permanent injuries to his respiratory system, and he required a vocoder to communicate effectively for the rest of his life. In a sense, Anakin Skywalker died on Mustafar, and the wrecked shell of his body was thereafter filled by the dark side and by the persona of Darth Vader. Vader himself would say that Anakin Skywalker was dead and gone, attempting to distance himself from his Jedi past. Obi-Wan even agreed with Vader's self-assessment, considering him so brutally changed from Anakin as to be a different person, a person who, in effect, killed Anakin through his decisions.
Born of Fire. Following the duel on Mustafar, Anakin's crippled body was taken to the Surgical Reconstruction Center on Coruscant by Darth Sidious. Once the cybernetic enhancements to the severed limbs, his respiratory system, and other internal organs were replaced in part, and he was encased in black armor and an iconic black helmet, and Darth Sidious informed Vader that Padme was dead, Darth Vader, as the galaxy would come to know him, was born. Sidious did not ignore the possibility of betrayal by his new lapdog. There has been much speculation that Vader's armor and life support systems were specifically designed to be cumbersome and limit the threat he could pose to his master. Any mention of Anakin Skywalker was removed from galactic records by the Imperial propaganda machine. Given how extensively Skywalker was involved in the Clone Wars and other Jedi operations, this was no simple task, and must have involved a small army of slicers and spies. After 19 BBY, few living people other than Sidious, Kenobi, and Jedi Master Yoda knew of Vader's origins, or the Jedi hero, Anakin Skywalker. Darth Sidious ordered the medical droids at the surgical center to keep Vader awake during the complex and painful surgical procedures needed to integrate him into his life support system and armor. This was possibly done in order to increase his rage, which is a known accelerant for dark side energy. Alternatively, Sidious may have done this as yet another subtle manipulation, further breaking Vader psychologically and making him more pliable and subservient. The mechanical limbs, for example, were crude and heavy, and not the most sophisticated examples of cybernetics that the Empire almost certainly had access to. Additionally, cybernetics are known to dampen force sensitivity. At the same time, many parts of the suit were imbued with Sith alchemy, no doubt at Sidious's request, making what power Vader retained dependent solely on Darth Sidious. Vader's helmet interfaced with his nervous system by way of needles inserted into his scalp and transmitted information into the computer in the chest-mounted control panel. The fact that needles were inserted into his flesh is further evidence that much of Vader's suit was designed sadistically by Darth Sidious. There is no reason to use such an invasive procedure to gather this kind of electroencephalographic data, as it can be easily and safely recorded using electrodes attached to the surface of the scalp. Higher fidelity EEG data could in theory be recorded by penetrating the skull and having electrodes contact neurons directly, but this would not be medically feasible. Brain function data was transmitted to the computer terminal on his chest, which in turn controlled his life support systems. Vader issued commands to the life support system via the control panel. For example, he could administer drugs to himself, regulate his breathing, and alter his vocoder through the control panel. To provide additional protection, and perhaps to compensate for his loss of force aptitude, the helmet was also imbued with Sith sorcery. The lenses of the helmet allowed Vader to see the infrared and ultraviolet light spectrums, which contained a heads-up display which projected information about atmospheric conditions, local biosignatures, and other tactical data. The HUD was controlled by movements of the tongue and lips. The collar on the armor was outfitted with feeding straws that provided RepMed Vitapaste, though Vader had the option of feeding intravenously, as the Vitapaste was unpalatable. Vader's vocal cords were irreparably damaged on Mustafar, and the Dark Lord's signature deep voice was created by a vocoder attached to his collar that detected muscle movements in his throat and amplified them through a speaker in his face mask. Without this enhancement, his voice would have sounded strained, quiet, and raspy due to the effects of smoke inhalation and a scorched respiratory tract. His voice, like the rest of his suit, was designed specifically to intimidate and cow subordinates and enemies. The suit was so cumbersome that Vader had to completely retool his fighting style to accommodate it. This took years of practice and physiotherapy before he could move and fight with anything resembling the alacrity and skill of Anakin Skywalker. His extensive injuries, combined with the force-inhibiting properties of the suit, permanently handicapped Vader's skills as a Sith. The armor did offer advantages over the more organic body of General Skywalker, however. The mechanized limbs conferred greater strength and stamina than their biological counterparts. Dursteel armor protected the entirety of his shoulders and upper chest. This material was resistant to blasters and energy blades, and presumably most other small arms he might face. His abdomen and organs were shielded by a plastoid girdle. To protect the rest of his body, he wore a body glove made of blast-dampening fire retardant and anti-corrosive material. His gloves were a fusion of Sith enchantments and Mandalorian armory, and in addition to providing some limited protection from energy weapons, provided an additional boon to his already frightening physical strength. His boots, like his chestplate, were forged from Durasteel, and also contain magnetic technology for use in microgravity environments. Even his cape offered additional protection for combat, being made of an armor weave material. Like stormtrooper armor, Vader's armor was climate controlled. It carried its own air supply and was capable of protecting him in space. Another combat advantage provided by the suit was a customized cocktail of Sith alchemical drugs, injected at will as the need arose. Having lost his lightsaber on Mustafar, one of Vader's first projects was forging a new weapon. His next model resembled Sith lightsabers of a previous era, and was based on Darth Sidious's weapon. The handle was bulkier and wider than most used by humans to accommodate the added girth and reduced dexterity of his gloved hands. It made use of a red synthetic crystal, which the Sith traditionally viewed as superior to the natural power crystals utilized by Knights of the Jedi Order. His updated saber style was a combination of lightsaber forms. Given that his most vulnerable body part was now his chest-mounted life support unit, the defensive aspect of his new style focused on protecting his center of mass. Offensively, he made use of strikes that did not require raising the arms above the head. This means that Vader had to use this powerful robotic arm to generate power strikes with small arcs, and precise movements of his wrists for short, fast inside work. Due to his shoulder armor, overhead strikes could now only be performed with significant difficulty. The style Vader eventually mastered was a refined version of the Jem-So lightsaber form, which incorporated elements of the Juyo, Ataru, and Soresu forms. This conglomeration of styles allowed Vader to compensate for the limitations of his mechanoid body while exploiting its advantages. The seed burns.
To the outside observer, Vader may have appeared to be a fanatical lapdog of Emperor Palpatine, but the truth is more nuanced. To start with, the Sidious Vader apprenticeship was cast in the rule of two mold. In this Sith philosophy, there can only be two Dark Lords, with the apprentice killing the master before taking on an apprentice of his own, or else the master does the same to the upstart. Anakin Skywalker had intended to betray Darth Sidious from the beginning of their master-apprentice relationship, and as soon as he learned the secret of controlling life in order to save his wife, Padme Amidala. The Nubian Queen was in the months prior to these events the subject of Force premonitions on the part of Anakin, and he believed that the only way to save her was by learning Sidious's dark secrets. This belief was part of the future Emperor's plan all along. The reason the Jedi Order prohibited attachments was to avoid the kind of temptation that Anakin was so weak to resist. Familial attachment motivated Vader's ultimate betrayal of Darth Sidious, as it also motivated his initial betrayal of the Jedi. It goes without saying that the catastrophic duel with Kenobi and Padme's death waylaid Vader's treacherous plans with respect to his new master. Amidala's death also killed much of Vader's will, and he thereafter allowed himself to become an extension of his master's will. Sidious overestimated his control of the cyborg, however. Years later, the seed of hatred planted by Sidious would sprout, and Vader took his revenge in 4 ABY.
Psychopathology.
Following the conclusion of the Clone Wars, Vader was a damaged man, physically as well as psychologically. He exhibited frequent bouts of rage and unpredictability, and was often violent, sometimes to the point of murder, towards subordinates. Given his position in the Empire, there were never any clinical consequences for his otherwise pathological behavior, so attempting to label the Dark Lord with a provisional diagnosis is futile. Furthermore, no diagnosis of any kind can be made for any individual without a clinical interview by a trained clinician. Instead, reference will be made to those mental illnesses which Vader's more extreme maladaptive behaviors are symptomatic of. At the very least, a person who was taken away from their family as a young child to be trained to kill, who then endured near constant combat conditions for 3 years, is likely to have difficulty adjusting to a life of peace. Anakin's first major trauma was separation from his mother at the age of 7, which was shortly compounded by the loss of his first father figure, Qui-Gon Jinn. At around the time he lost his master Jinn, Anakin was also inadvertently caught in and then fought in the battle for Naboo. These traumas combined with nearly being killed by his only living father figure, Obi-Wan, and his perceived murder of his own wife are a recipe for psychological disaster. Vader's case becomes more acute when one accounts for whatever destabilizing effects the dark side of the Force might have on a person's psyche, the possible addiction to various Sith drugs, and the severe chronic pain he likely dealt with as a consequence of his duel on Mustafar. The capricious violence he subjected to those around him is similar to a core feature of intermittent explosive disorder. Quote, recurrent behavioral outbursts representing a failure to control aggressive impulses, end quote. His ability to quickly order the death of thousands of beings without a second thought bears a resemblance to antisocial personality disorder, where an individual's display a, quote, pervasive and persistent disregard for moral, social norms and the rights and feelings of others, end quote. Vader had intense, recurring dreams of an alternate life, where Anakin chose differently and Padme lived, along with their child, whom Vader believed died at birth. Each time this dream recurred, Vader would wake in a state of severe depression, perhaps driving further violent behavior and further disassociation from his past identity. The proceeding fit well into the category of persistent complex grief disorder, where the person's, quote, feelings of longing are often accompanied by destructive thoughts and behaviors, as well as general impairment in resuming normal life, end quote. The fixation on his past grew to an obsession with erasing that past. Even Darth Sidious considered Vader's fixation on tracking down and killing Obi-Wan and the other scattered Jedi an unnecessary distraction to consolidating control of the galaxy. In the early years of the Empire, revenge became an all-consuming pursuit. Yet because of the resources, authority, and freedom from prosecution provided by his rank, the clinical impact of this obsession was moderated. Like many people with personality disorders, Vader exhibited an external locus of control. That is, he believed that his horrible actions were the result of Jedi treachery, and they left him with no choice but wanton child slaying at the Jedi Temple, and the similar immoral actions that took place afterwards. It was the Jedi, he believed, who made him paranoid and angry enough to assault his wife. Vader took no personal responsibility for his actions for many years. Post-traumatic stress disorder, major depression, and addiction to certain psychoactive chemicals, all disorders for which Vader was at risk, can predispose an individual to experiencing a psychotic episode. The primary feature of this psychiatric condition is a disconnection from reality that includes hallucinations, delusions, bizarre or irrational behavior, and speech that is nonsensical or difficult to understand. Vader experienced all of these symptoms while on a mission to the world of Atoa. In the midst of carrying out the rescue of an Imperial officer, Vader had a vision of Padme, which included auditory hallucinations and affective lability. Since the late Queen of Naboo was not known to be a Force sensitive, it is unlikely that this was a vision induced by the Force. Furthermore, seeing a past loved one is a very common experience for those going through the grief process, sometimes for years following the death. It is unlikely that Vader ever grieved in a healthy way for his loss, given his wholesale denial of his identity as Anakin Skywalker. After the hallucination, Vader embarked on a desperate and violent search for his wife, who he irrationally believed was somewhere on Atoa. This was a clear-cut delusion, as he was the one who killed her, and there was no logical reason why Padme would be on Atoa. He screamed and rambled to enemy combatants and comrades in arms alike, believing they were hiding Padme's whereabouts, demonstrating paranoia, another common feature of psychosis. No longer seeing a distinction between friend or foe, Vader killed both Imperials and Rebels in his mad, futile quest. The episode culminated in a suicide attempt when Vader used the Force to collapse an entire cathedral on himself. Suicide and self-harm are tragically common outcomes of psychotic episodes. After the Atooan incident, Vader no longer experienced symptoms of psychosis, although his antisocial and violent behaviors continued until his death. He continued to show no empathy towards other beings and remained cruel and malicious in the execution of his duties for the Empire. Psychotic disorders rarely improve without medication, and it is possible that adjustments were made to Vader's regimen of Sith alchemical drugs to prevent recurrences of this condition. It should be noted that it is theoretically possible for a person to experience a single psychotic episode, receive no treatment, yet experience no further episodes in their lifetime. As for the symptoms of the personality disorders, those are notoriously difficult to medicate, and it could be that they are features of dark side users as much as they are of individuals with specific mental illnesses.
A reign of fear and destruction.
I've been waiting for you, Obi-Wan. We meet again at last. The circle is now complete. When I left you, I was but the learner. Now I am the master.
Only a master of evil, Darth.
The Galactic Empire followed a pattern common to many dictatorships, particularly in their early years. Just prior to the creation of the Galactic Empire, Darth Sidious initiated Order 66, wherein clone troopers all across the Grand Army of the Republic assassinated their Jedi commanders. Anakin Skywalker played a significant role purging the Jedi from the Republic, spearheading the assault on the Jedi Temple in Coruscant, personally killing younglings, Padawans, and prominent knights like Battlemaster Sin Dralig. A great purge of political dissidents, malcontents, and enemies of the state, both real and imagined, followed. Darth Vader took the violence of the Temple Massacre to the galaxy at large, as he scoured space in his hunt for Obi-Wan Kenobi and any other survivors of Order 66. The killing did not stop when the Jedi were gone, and along with the 501st Legion, sometimes referred to as Vader's Fists, Vader traveled the stars, quelling rebellions, executing political prisoners, and tightening the Empire's stranglehold on the galaxy. Notable executions carried out by Vader are legion. They include the massacre at Kessel, where a cabal of Jedi lured Vader into a trap. Despite being outnumbered and ambushed, Vader killed Sia Lan Wes, Dama Montalvo, Kofi Arana, Maxishalas, Potkin, Arana, and Sui Choi during the course of the melee. Vader lost a cybernetic arm and leg, but these were simply replaced with identical, cumbersome models. Other notable Jedi slayings include Sayadam Forte, Iwo Koka, and Shakun.
You'll speak to the Emperor about...
Be careful not to choke on your aspirations, Director.
Not even Imperials were safe from Vader's wrath, and he frequently assaulted and killed officers for perceived incompetence or disloyalty. Even members of the Admiralty were subject to the Sith's anger, and he would physically abuse them with the Force, or even kill when it suited him. Although there is hardly a rank or station in the Imperial hierarchy not assaulted or murdered by Vader at some point, he generally treated stormtroopers the best. Perhaps he trusted or respected these soldiers for their clone army heritage and all the battles he fought alongside them as Anakin Skywalker. From 19 to 17 BBY, Vader was a principal commander of the reconquest of the Rim. This military campaign was focused on obliterating separatist holdouts from the Clone Wars and, quote-unquote, liberating worlds previously resistant to or uninterested in being members of the Galactic Republic. It represents Vader's greatest achievement as a military tactician. Vader was responsible for many massacres that can only be considered war crimes. On Atoa, he ordered every civilian old enough to hold a weapon to be killed and burn the city to the ground. On Falleen, he obliterated a city with a population of 200,000 to contain an accidental outbreak of a bioweapon, the creation of which he was responsible for. He played a significant role in pacifying the Wookiee homeworld of Keshik, alongside Wilhuff Tarkin. The labor of the enslaved Wookiees was used to construct both Death Stars. There is an additional flavor of horror to these actions when one considered Anakin Skywalker's personal history as a liberated slave. This behavior makes slightly more sense in light of Vader's attempt to distance himself from the biography of Anakin. It is perhaps only by believing that he was someone else, some sort of machine of the Emperor's, that he could carry out such atrocious actions as wholesale enslavement. A complete catalog of Darth Vader's war crimes could likely fill a holocron. Vader retained some of Anakin's skill, particularly in the areas of piloting, engineering, and a fearless approach to combat. Though he was the highest-ranking person in the Imperial military's chain of command, he thought nothing of personally leading troops into battle, and preferred it that way. His equipment loadout on ground missions included merely his lightsaber and his armor, as he believed, and proved, that all he needed was those tools and the power of the Force to defeat any enemy. Though he was the captain aboard warships such as Executor, Vader frequently relinquished command when they engaged enemy forces. Instead, he led squadrons of TIE fighters in his own advanced prototype, the X-1. This fighter had a shield deflector and hyperdrive, unlike standard TIEs, and the design was conceived of by Vader himself when he realized a more powerful fighter was necessary to dogfight with Rebel X-Wings. The design was never mass-produced, but insights from its engineering were used to produce later models of Imperial fighters, such as the TIE Interceptor. Vader's primary residence was in a castle on Coruscant, and he also owned and sometimes resided in Bast Castle on Vijun. During the Galactic Civil War, Vader's vehicle of choice and home away from home was Executor, a newly minted class of starship eponymously classed as an Executor-class Star Dreadnought. This vessel dwarfed its Imperial and Victory-class counterparts and had a minimum crew complement of 50,000 beings. Executor, like the Death Star that preceded it, exemplifies the Empire's obsession with raw military power and physical presence. Executor's design resembles a dagger, allowing nobody to doubt that it is a weapon. If Executor was unsheathed in a system, death was sure to follow, and it inspired fear similar to the Death Star. Colossal ships like these, built on near-cosmic scales, are as much propaganda pieces as war material. Their function is intimidation, as much as destruction. They scream to the galaxy that those who built them control the stars, and all of the beings that orbit them. Executor was no slouch in the destruction department either, and had thousands of turbo lasers capable of destroying all life on the surface of any inhabited planet, and had enough troop and vehicle carrying capacity to launch a full-scale planetary invasion. While his competence as a frontline warrior is unassailable, there is some questions as to his abilities as a commander. Yet, masterful tactics are not necessarily required when one has the raw firepower, manpower, and callous disregard for the sanctity of life displayed by Darth Vader. He was like a force of nature, capable of wiping out entire species and permanently changing the face of entire planets and cultures. A specific example of such cultural manipulation was the Nagri people of Honegger. Here, Vader poisoned their worlds, causing an ecological collapse. He then blamed the collapse on the rebels and promised to restore their world as well as help bring them vengeance. The Nagri thereafter swore fealty to Vader and served the Empire as assassins until 9 ABY. It is hard to reconcile Vader's consistent failure to capture his son across many confrontations, given his previous success in Jedi hunting. Certainly Skywalker was formidable, but until their duel on the second Death Star, all evidence points to Vader being the superior warrior. As Supreme Commander of the Empire's military, Vader had practically unlimited resources to pursue his quarry. When he discovered Prince Zizhor's plot to kill Skywalker, the Supreme Commander focused on destroying Zizhor and his Black Sun Navy rather than pursuing the Jedi. In light of Vader's recurring dreams of being reunited with Padme and his child, it is possible that he in fact allowed Skywalker to elude him. Some small part of his humanity was still shining beneath all the Durasteel wires and Sith magic, wishing for a healing of his fractured family. Regicide.
In order to fulfill his long-term goal of overthrowing and killing his master, Lord Vader trained several apprentices, such as Tau, Enix Davian, Galen Merrick, and the latter's clone. Given the incredibly dangerous and monumental task he was training them for, their tutelage was fraught with hazards. To a being, each one was eventually killed or else betrayed Vader in the end. All endured great suffering under their Dark Master's tutelage. Once Vader learned that his child had not died during birth, but was in fact the rebel pilot who destroyed the Death Star, he set his sights on recruiting the Ronin Jedi. Vader dreamed of taking vengeance on Darth Sidious, together with Luke, for the circumstances he orchestrated that led to Padme's death. However, Skywalker would not give in to the temptation of the dark side and the will to power as his father before him. Luke met his father halfway, distracting Sidious aboard the Death Star II, long enough to give Vader an opportunity 23 years in the making. While torturing Skywalker with Force lightning, Vader approached Palpatine from behind, hoisted the frail Emperor's body up above his head, and threw him down a large shaft. According to some, this betrayal fulfilled the prophecy of the Chosen One, as the Order of the Sith Lords died with Palpatine and Vader aboard the Death Star II. Though he was injured in the preceding duel by Luke, it was the contact with the Force lightning swirling around Palpatine that killed Vader. The life support control unit mounted on his chest was particularly vulnerable to electrical discharges. This may have been another liability designed by the Emperor, a failsafe should his apprentice betray him. In his last moments, Vader assumed his birth name, Anakin Skywalker, having made peace with his vile past. His corpse became one with the Force, leaving his obsidian armor and cybernetics as his only remains. Luke Skywalker brought the armor down to the moon of Endor and cremated it in the traditional Jedi funerary ritual.
And now, a word from our sponsors.
RetMed VitaPaste. Good enough for a Dark Lord of the Sith? Good enough for you. Now with reconfigured flavor molecules and intravenous feeding options. Contact your local fruit distributor to find out more. Visit RetMed on the HoloNet for monthly VitaPaste subscription options. Nutrition and vitamins made easy. RetMed VitaPaste.
Welcome back again to the Millennial Falcon, and for our segment, A Certain Point of View, where we discuss the content of the episode that we just went over. Joining me in the cockpit is Jordan, as always.
Howdy.
And Sam.
This is socially distant Sam Swaim here.
There's no more social distance than the void of space.
That's right. We are as isolated as you can get.
We are 4 parsecs away from Earth.
Darth Vader. Big, so, big episode.
It is a big episode for a big man. Just some random sort of Star Wars ephemera I came across is some alternate names for lightsabers and some of George's original scripts were laser swords and the incredibly lame laser batons.
Sounds not very lethal. That's a non-lethal setting on the lightsaber.
Did no one think of laser saber?
I think laser batons would have been a serious mistake. Laser swords.
Laser scimitar.
Ooh. There's actually light whips.
Oh, yeah.
In the Star Wars lore, there's one... I won't spoil it because she's a really important character later on, but there's one Dark Lord of the Sith that has a light whip instead of a lightsaber. That's
pretty
very cool.
Cool.
So Vader was like the supreme commander of the Empire's military, which is something me and Christian kind of went back and forth on this a little bit. It's like, was he the... I always thought that he was sort of outside of the chain of command.
Imperial hierarchy, yeah.
But I actually looked it up on Wikipedia, and it does appear that he was the supreme commander.
Yeah, he had, like, I think he exists in both realms, where, like, as Sidious's enforcer and apprentice, he is outside of the Imperial power structure, the same way the whole Sith, you know, the Emperor is both the Sith Lord and a political figure as
right.
well.
So, yeah, it seems like Palpatine is kind of more the president, if you will, and then like,
but he's also like a high priest behind
of a
secretly.
Religion that only has one other follower,
or the Grand Ayatollah, let's call him.
Yeah.
And then the Vader is more like the military leader.
Yeah,
is that...
so that's Vader's political role as well.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
He exists in both spaces as well, yeah. Where he does fall into the Imperial hierarchy as well.
Yeah,
he's pretty close to like. There's only a couple of other people that may or may not outrank him. I'd see it more as like they're on the same level and can tell each other what to do. Grand Moff Tarkin being one of them.
Yeah.
But
The Moffs were not military commanders though, right? They were like political governors.
So that's where it gets blurry again.
But it's blurry because it's a totalitarian regime,
exactly,
right? So
yes.
What's the difference between a political
they still
position?
Command military assets.
Yeah.
So yeah, we'll dive more into the power structure of the Empire on our Empire episode. Mm-hmm. But it is interesting to see where Vader stands in that hierarchy.
Right. And as far as his performance, let's give Vader a performance review. Like, you get at your job every 6 months. So,
careful, you might get force choked.
In the sort of the Lao Tzu art of war sense of the term, was Vader a good general in that he was like... effective and sort of won his battles with the least expenditure of resources on his part and in the most efficient way possible? Or was he just a blunt instrument that was kind of used by the Emperor? And it's like, he's so powerful, you don't need to worry about advanced tactics and being efficient.
He becomes a wrecking ball.
Because he's just a wrecking ball. And that's what he does. He just blows everything up.
I think both...
He's a hammer and everything's a nail.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think both can, again, be true at the same time. I think because he has, like, the vast resources of the Empire at his disposal.
A little thing that I was maybe a little confused about that, with Vader in the scripted portion with Vader being described as, like, a... not necessarily the greatest strategist.
I meant to take that out, but
oh, did you? Well, I was just going to say, like,
he
wasn't in the Clone Wars, wasn't he like a military strategist and like instrumental in all that?
I'm glad you brought that up.
Okay.
Because I try to build the case, and Vader builds the case for himself, that he is not Anakin Skywalker.
Sure.
Yeah. Right? So when we're giving Vader his performance review, we can't take the Clone Wars into account because that was a different person. That was a different identity.
Yeah. I don't know. I feel like he would still, like, his experience, like, his he's experiences don't just, like, yeah, disappear because he
chooses
he's a different persona.
And and here's points in favor of that, is there was the reconquest of the Rim. That was sort of the Empire cementing their hold over the galaxy immediately after the Clone Wars. And he was the supreme commander of that expedition. And that was pretty successful. My argument for him not being a very good commander, I guess it's primarily around the fact that, I mean, he was so often putting himself in danger, and he's like the supreme commander, which I get that he's invincible basically, and he knows he's invincible, so he can do that. But I mean, how good are you even going to be at battlefield tactics when you're actually fighting and not stepping back? And how much of battlefields were effectively operated by the generals and the commanders who were under Vader while he was out slaying rebels?
I can see like a justification for his stark change in like strategy from Anakin to Darth Vader. And one would just be the political goals of the Emperor being they wanted to intimidate the galaxy and they wanted to strike fear. So it's for political reasons, it would make more sense for him to be the way he was as Darth Vader rather than like a careful strategist. You know?
Politics often curtails military strategy.
Yeah, yeah.
Like even in real life.
Yeah.
I would argue too. One, he can set up battle plans and then engage after the fact. Granted, a good leader would also be able to adapt to a changing battlefield situation.
I would just think that you'd want your head tactician to be watching the battle unfold, right?
Yeah, which with advanced galactic technology in Star Wars, like they would be able to compensate, I think, a little bit for that. Like their communications would be really good. Their, you know, ability to create holo maps and really detailed battle space planes, right?
And I'm sure Vader's lenses could get tactical information sent to him.
But at the same time, you know, he executes a lot of generals and admirals for failure, which implies that he left them in command and they screwed up and, you know.
And isn't that just kind of a sign of him being a bad manager? That he's like leaving incompetent people in charge all the time?
Maybe, or maybe his standards are so high that like they're almost...
Which is also...
Everyone is going to fail. But then only the best will rise to the ranks, right? Who knows?
Except for they didn't, because he killed them all. And then also my case for him being a bad general is in the, especially the, because Marvel originally did the Star Wars comics, right? The classic Star Wars run. Yeah. And they filled in a lot of that between A New Hope and Empire Strikes Back material.
Yeah.
And in those episodes, in those comic books, It's pretty much like a weekly Saturday morning cartoon type thing of Luke Skywalker evading Vader yet again, yet again.
Yeah, yeah.
And then even if you discount...
It rhymes.
So Luke probably got away at least a dozen times from Vader, from him being like almost there. And then he skates away. And then even if you say, oh, well, that's just silly Saturday morning cartoon stuff, there's still material like what's that comic book called where they go to Mimban? Splinter of the Mind's Eye, where is again...
Well, that was a novel, too.
Yeah, and it was the first Star Wars novel, where it's, again, Luke Skywalker getting the better of Darth Vader.
Yeah, yeah.
That's also... I mean, Luke Skywalker's got to be an exception, you know? It's not that you're bad at your job, it's that someone's just better than you at X job, you know? So it's not maybe fair to say that Vader is a bad general only because Skywalker seems to evade him so frequently. It's kind of like the Worf effect, right? Where
he can't open doors.
Yes.
Doors are Klingon's worst enemy.
No, but like, you know, in order to make someone else look better than you, you know, you're supposed to be the big tough guy. And then to make someone actually be a believable threat, they make the big tough guy look weak, right? Kind of like, oh, Vader's this big bad. And then, but Luke keeps escaping, and because Luke is such a hero, right? So
I wonder if there was intended to be a little bit of like an element of like force luck in that. Like,
yeah, and that's how you could read into it. Yeah, is like, you know, Luke's got the force on his side.
Yeah, it's almost that fate wouldn't allow it, you know? Right.
And then there's also Vader. Vader's a very complex character. And sometimes, like, you know, just from seeing him as this big wrecking ball, you like think he's always there to intimidate, always there to kill, but he's actually a deep thinker, and he could be playing a bigger, longer con, which again is a point in favor of him being a good general, because he's playing the long strategy.
Yeah.
He's letting the rebels escape to find their base, right? Yeah. He's, you know, and you know what? Even then, he called out the Death Star's weakness. Now that I'm thinking back to New Hope, he knew that the Death Star was, you know, that Tarkin was being overly
confident.
Yes,
and technology. Yeah, where he was so like, he got all so about fed up.
He's like, you know what? I'm going to deal as Vader does. I'm going to deal with this myself, and gets in a TIE fighter.
Yeah,
you know, because he knew, he's like, you know, this is a real threat. You're underestimating them.
Yeah.
So again, I think that speaks to general. I was gonna call him General Skywalker. Darth Vader knows, you know, strategy. He knows military tactics. He knows,
yeah.
And maybe he doesn't rely on them because, like you said, he knows his capabilities. And the nature of the Stormtrooper Corps too is to be a hammer.
Yeah.
So, you know, knowing, you know, he's playing to the Empire's strengths.
Yeah.
So yes, reducing casualties isn't an operational objective of his, right? Yeah. He's like, I don't care how many men it costs. I just, you know, I'm going to complete my objective. Policy, exactly. Yeah. So, I don't know if it's fair to say he's a bad general, but...
yeah.
That's my stance.
From a certain point of view.
From a certain point of view, yes.
Yeah, that would be it. Like, if it's efficiency and, like...
And that's
it's
why
a trade-off. It's a trade-off.
Right? That's why I couched it in the Lao Tzu sense of being a good general, where he sets out the terms of...
Yeah.
A good general doesn't fight, right? Because he can maneuver before the battle so well that the enemy's just going to give up and not even bother
fighting. Right, but if your actual objective
is to kill people.
Right, exactly. Yeah. It's like, well, not fighting is not a win.
You can't be a general. You can't be a Lao Tzu general.
Yeah. So maybe we're just playing with a different definition of a good general.
That's possible. Since you brought up stormtroopers, what do you think about, and we had a little bit of a debate, and maybe some of our viewers can enlighten us. I could only find one instance of Vader ever killing stormtroopers. And that was actually like self-defense. The stormtroopers were trying to kill him, and that's why he killed them. What say you, Christian?
So this got really murky because, you know, now in the present sense, it's, you always got to pick apart what is legends, what is canon.
Yeah, I think
it
happens in canon.
In canon, it happens a lot,
but actually, not in legends.
Yeah,
as far as I can tell,
he does kill
in like the new comic run.
Yeah,
basically.
Yeah, he kills quite a few.
Yeah.
He does kill also in the video game, The Force Unleashed. He does kill a number of Imperial officers and frontline troopers.
That's what I'm saying, though. He kills officers all the time, but frontline. Not stormtroopers.
He does kill stormtroopers in that instance.
Not in the video you sent me.
Okay, it happens off screen, but it's highly, heavily implied that he kills everyone.
Okay, it happens off screen. Sure. It's implied.
So I think that comes from, and that's the thing too, like you were saying, like Anakin Vader trying to divorce his identity from Anakin, but not being fully able to sever that.
Yeah, because of course you can't, because that's ridiculous. Yeah. That's part of his life, right?
Like Anakin had...
And the part of his life we're referring to is the fact that Stormtroopers are an evolution of clone troopers.
Yes.
Right? And which General Skywalker was in the S with all during the Clone Wars.
Yes, exactly. And he developed very strong relationships with many clone troopers.
Yeah, he actually, and this is an interesting thing when we're talking about identity, is I think General Skywalker was like one of the first people to start telling clones that they had an identity
and personality
and were valuable as people and gave them names and stuff.
Yeah, it definitely was very much tied to Anakin. So in that, like, there is definitely a a form of respect that carries over even with his persona as Darth Vader. He has a respect for frontline soldiers. And being like a frontline leader, as Anakin, as Darth Vader, he likes to be in the mix, be that his personality or the type, you know, his capabilities. But he is a frontline soldier. And I see Vader actually very much like a veteran. Like he...
Yeah, of course.
He has that mentality. A veteran. Yeah. Yes. He, you know, he knows what it's like to be on the front lines. Yeah. He knows what misery looks like. And he suffers. He suffered, you know, everything from loss of his own limbs in combat to really horrific psychological injuries as well.
One more maybe just speculation about the reason why he goes into the front lines like that too could just be the... perhaps like just his own internal mental torment is like far too difficult to handle, and all he can do is just take action, you know, and not be like sidelined.
But he also does that a lot as General Skywalker though during the Clone Wars enough. Like Obi-Wan's constantly chiding him and scolding him for...
Maybe he just gets a rush from the battle
and that's like, he just likes to fight
and it speaks to him as a person, right? Not so much as, you know, a grand strategist or anything.
Yeah, I mean, he started pod racing when he's 7. The guy's like an adrenaline junkie.
He's addicted. That's true. But anyways, kind of back to the whole relationship with stormtroopers. I think he doesn't like to kill stormtroopers necessarily because of that kind of historical respect between them. And I think that also changes too between stormtroopers and clone troopers, where there is a distinction, but there is also a period of overlap, especially with the 501st Legion. The fact that he adopts a personal legion too, I think, speaks to his relationship with the stormtrooper corps. The 501st are Vader's fist, right?
Yeah.
He hand selects a group who were largely still clone troopers even into the Empire era.
Yeah.
So I think out of that history and respect, he still has that relationship with frontline soldiers. But by the same token, he's also not unwilling to kill his own men, or, you know, the situation will dictate to him what he does with his own soldiers, right?
Yeah.
If in the sense of the Force Unleashed, he kills all the witnesses because he saw an opportunity in this new potential apprentice, right? So that his personal gain trumped the well-being of the soldiers under him.
That's another thing I want to bring up in Vader's performance review is how many of his apprentices died. He tried to take on like half a dozen apprentices and none of them worked out. So bad job, Vader.
Maybe.
I'm just saying, on paper, how many apprentices did he take and how many worked out?
I'd only say a handful, if not only a couple of actual apprentices. The others were tools. I think that also speaks to Vader's character. Like, he uses people, he uses assets as tools for a bigger, better objective. He does this quite frequently, right? Even with his own son, it's hard to tell. Does Vader want Luke out of, like, a personal affinity for his own son to rule the galaxy with him? Or is he using him just as a tool to overthrow the Emperor, right? It's hard to tell with Vader what his personal, personal objectives are versus what his strategic objectives are. And sometimes, like, he can use one to disguise the other, right? So, and I think that adds depth to the character. I love Darth Vader. Darth Vader is honestly like my personal, one of my favorite characters in Star Wars, and is constantly cited as one of like the best villains in like top 10 or top 100 lists of fiction.
Yeah.
So he's a very interesting character from like any angle you try to cut him.
Yeah. He is definitely. Yeah.
So the duel on the first Death Star did, if you watch the movie A New Hope, to me, it does not look like Vader's lightsaber contacted Obi-Wan at all before he dematerialized. So I contend that Obi-Wan used the Force to dematerialize before getting hit, and he did not get killed and then dematerialize.
This sounds like a who shot first situation.
It's very much a who shot first situation.
I know, but I think Sam's the only person on the planet that thinks what he thinks.
But tell me what you think.
I actually never thought of that.
If you watch it,
It is odd that he sort of like almost gives up and like kneels.
Yeah, he closes his eyes.
Yeah, yeah.
And takes his lightsaber away from a fighting position.
Yeah.
So...
But I don't think that's implied.
Yeah, so this came up because Sam and I were fighting in the script about what happened in that instance. So my contention is that every other Jedi dies before they dematerialize. So that would be the first and only instance of that happening for Obi-Wan. Second, I think it's a limitation of the time that that was filmed, that they didn't, you know, when and where, you know, you'd have to do frame by frame literally to see how deep the lightsaber penetrates to actually determine like cause of death.
It doesn't penetrate at all.
I think it does. I think
no, it doesn't.
Again, I'm going to say it's limitation of technology at the time, because even Obi-Wan himself says, if you strike me down, I will be more powerful. Like, why doesn't Obi-Wan just dematerialize anyways?
That's a good question. That'd
be more scary if he just like was facing Vader down and then all of a sudden just vanished, right? So I had a couple other points too, but I can't remember them off the top of my head. I think it's a stretch to say.
I think it's an interesting speculation, but I think it's a speculation.
Yeah.
Unless there's some sort of like other material
evidence
that sort of explains that more, I go with just he was sliced down and
yeah,
immediately
that's
disappeared.
My contention.
Well, here's the thing though, like Qui-Gon got stabbed, right? And he didn't dematerialize.
But right. He didn't die right away.
And that's also, yeah.
When he got stabbed.
But they do burn his body, though.
Oh, that's right.
You don't necessarily have to dematerialize. This would probably be a better topic for a different episode. But you don't, your physical form, well, maybe it makes sense because Darth Vader happens the same thing.
Becoming it was a little force, inconsistent for him not to, for Qui-Gon not to dematerialize.
Maybe not. So I don't believe you have to dematerialize in order to come back as a conscious element in the Force. I just think it's an aspect of it.
But why would some people?
I'd have to do more research into, you know, what the technique actually is and what it entails. And maybe it's not written. I don't know.
Is it a technique or does
it? It is a technique because Obi-Wan is
and Yoda too.
Yeah, exactly. And it's because at the end of Episode 3, they say that Qui-Gon learned this ability, and that's it's implied that he teaches Obi-Wan and teaches Yoda as a Force ghost how to essentially come back as a ghost. But it's not not also the only time Force ghosts appear. It happens a lot in, you know, in the EU. You have tons of both Sith and Jedi ghosts that come back in different and it's different.
And that's the reason why Qui-Gon doesn't, I'm just trying to remember.
He doesn't come back in the films, but he does make a presence in the EU. Yes.
Even though he didn't disappear.
Exactly. So that's why I'm saying it's not a hard and fast rule on your body needs to dematerialize. I also believe that
Or it
Anakin,
could just be a plot hole, like a very minor plot hole.
I don't believe, well, probably it happened, but Star Wars is great about filling plot holes with the EU. So again, and same thing for, and kind of bringing it back to Darth Vader, I believe it said that Darth Vader's physical form disappears after he dies.
Yeah, it does.
And what you see at the end is Luke is only torching his cybernetic armor and body, right?
Yeah.
Not the, because obviously his arms and limbs were also cybernetic. They wouldn't disappear with Anakin. It'd just be his torso and head.
Yeah.
But
very creepy.
Yeah. So
shouldn't his Force ghost then have no legs and
arms? No, because then you'd have like Qui-Gon with a hole in his chest and Obi-Wan half sliced to his heart. And
yeah.
Not Obi-Wan though, because he disappeared before getting sliced.
Yeah, so I think that's...
His robe isn't even singed.
I think it folds itself over so you don't see the scorch mark.
So when Vader kills Palpatine, was that... How much of that was like defending his son or just taking an opportunity to like fulfill his vengeance?
So that, again, because Vader is so complicated and without knowing exactly what he's thinking in that moment.
Little column A, little column B.
So my problem with taking revenge is that that whole scene is portrayed as Vader coming back to the light.
Right.
That's Vader's redemption, right?
Yeah, I've always seen it as saving his son.
Yeah, personally. And so revenge is very much a Sith attribute. Yeah. It's not something a Jedi would do. And so
is attachment, which is the whole reason he did it, is because he was attached to his son.
That is true.
Not a Jedi ideal.
More plot holes.
No, stop it. The plot hole is that the Jedi Council was wrong. Anakin was actually right.
Yeah, yeah.
So anyways, in that instance, I see it less as revenge and more as redemption, in the sense of like, okay, he's an immediate threat to my son.
Yeah, yeah.
And so he's trying to save, you know, knowing that his son is the only Jedi left, or at least the legacy of the Jedi is going to now be alive in Luke. that's him saving that and being turned to the light in that moment. Because if it's an act of anger and revenge and hate, that seems less redemptive of Vader and more just Vader acting
that
as
motivation,
Vader would.
That motivation, however, is a little bit sullied in the fact that in the EU material, he has been planning on taking out Palpatine for a long time.
Since the beginning.
That's my point too. Yes. Yeah.
So,
and all of the apprentices he took were towards that end of him training somebody to help him take down Palpatine.
Which is also interesting too, and speaks to the complexity of Sith ideology, is that Anakin or Vader might think he's acting like out of revenge, but it's also very much a Sith thing to do is to kill your master and then consolidate power.
Yeah.
So it's funny how even in trying to win, he still kind of loses and becomes more Sith than he realizes. That was kind of a side note. That being said, I like the idea that Vader's always trying to kill Palpatine, and there's that kind of dynamic of like, yeah, everyone sees him as some slave and some servant, but really he's a complex thinker and he's plotting and he's like waiting for the right time to strike.
It's a very long con.
Yeah. And I think though, with him returning to the light side, it's just an overlap of objectives.
Right.
So it's just circumstantial that killing Palpatine in that moment is also in line with his former objective as well.
But there's also evidence. Yeah, it is making me doubt
everything you knew.
Did he actually go to the light side though? Or was he?
I think in one of our first episodes, this is the point I made, is that it was ultimately a dark side act.
Yeah, because even like in the battle on Cloud City, right? Like he didn't want to kill Luke. Like he just wanted Luke to join him, right? And he still sort of had this affinity for Luke, knowing that it was his son, and this attachment to Luke, right?
Or was it attachment, or was it a strategic move to have someone powerful in the Force help him take down the Emperor? Who knows? I'm just that's what he told Luke, but is that what he really believed?
Yeah, but what I'm saying, whatever the case may be, like, did he? I'll have to watch
questioning
the,
everyone.
I'll have to read the specific lines he said. Like when
I'm
he
in
died.
Your head.
Like when Vader actually died. Like what exactly were the words that he
so
said?
So Vader, he did redeem himself because he thanks Luke, and he also comes back as a Force ghost, standing beside Yoda and Obi-Wan. So I think that's
true,
not disputed of whether or not he did redeem himself. There's a whole thing about, as a plot element, death, redemption and death. They do this again with the canon things with Kylo dying, and somehow that absolves someone of all the sins of their past.
Right, right.
At least to an audience, right?
Yeah.
I don't think that necessarily has to be the case.
Yeah, especially as we detailed in this episode. Vader has a lot of blood on his hands.
That's like Hitler doing like an about face right before his death. It doesn't absolve him of everything. It's like the Christian idea
of like
redemption.
You can be forgiven of all your sins no matter what you did.
Yeah, but you can escape the consequences.
In the afterlife, as long as you like believe in Jesus or what have you, you can go to heaven, right? Like there isn't necessarily
you go to Jedi heaven.
Yeah. there isn't necessarily like a punish, though it depends on whose theology, but there isn't necessarily a punishment for sins as long as you've like confessed and believed.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, and it seems
and that almost
the,
like
the
what
Force
happens
works
with
in
Vader.
A similar way. Yeah. Yes, because like, although Vader killed and did a lot of horrific things.
Yeah.
We can't
You just make a deathbed conversion, and then everything is forgiven.
Yeah. And again, I think that's more of a moral philosophical question versus like, you know, can he still be held accountable? Suppose that Vader survived, right? He would still probably be tried as some kind of big war criminal.
For sure, yeah.
Maybe not in like the happy ending of Star Wars, because everyone would be like, oh, look, Luke's dad is back, and the audience wants to have a happy reconciliatory ending.
Right.
But in reality, I mean, if it really did happen that way, he very well may, you know, okay, cool, you're redeemed, I guess, but you're still going to jail for the rest of your life or executed
or whatever.
I don't see the Republic actually, we'll have to do an episode on the judicial system of Star Wars, because I don't see the Republic carrying out executions.
They must have after the second Death Star destroyed. I bet you they executed
him. I don't think so.
You don't think so?
I don't think
we'll
so.
We'll have to look
I don't think
that.
It's in line with Republic.
Yeah, because later on, the Galactic Civil War doesn't technically end until like 40 ABY, and they actually make a truce with the Imperial Remnant then, then the Imperial Remnant and the Alliance kind of merge into one entity.
Right.
Yeah, it's complicated.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
All right. Well, I see the Hapes cluster is coming up fast, and I've got to disengage autopilot and bring this bird in for a landing. We'll see you guys next time.
You are listening in the to Millennial the Star Wars Podcast. I find your lack of faith disturbing.
Why, you stuck up, half witted, scruffy looking nerf herder!
I was going into Tosche Station to pick up some power converters.
Take a deep breath in and exhale gently. Just become aware of the speed of your breathing. By breathing deeply and slowly, your body and mind gradually relax. Take another deep breath in and exhale gently. A red transmuting laser of light penetrates the crown of your head. The laser incinerates any positivity, any security, or sense of safety. The laser transmutes any remnants of a unified force, leaving behind only darkness. Keep calling on the deep red to vaporize any thoughts of comfort. Call on it now with the chaos of your thoughts. Fear manifests as phobias, neuroses, violence, and terror. See this red light focusing your fears and returning them to dark side energy. In moments, the fear will fill all imaginable space in your twisted body. Demand that the darkness seals you and shields you from the light. If you are not feeling as though you are moments from death, visualize the light-based force drowning beneath the waves of your opaque darkness. This light can no longer touch you. No warmth can caress your skin. Demand that the darkness takes away any energy that is meant for your highest good. That path lies many light years behind you, buried beneath mountains of corpses. Invoke the darkness. Make it remove the light permanently from you. Visualize the red light sealing your darkness and pain, festering so that only hate-based energies may enter your body. Hold misery in your heart. Allow this feeling to expand out from your heart and expand throughout your body. Condemn the light
for its weakness. Remember that we are slaves to the Force until we embrace its darkest aspect. Disrespect and subjugate the free will of others, as is the right of the Sith given by the dark side. Whenever you are happy or content, remember your broken body, your dead wife and son. Over time, your peace will erode, being replaced by the power of the dark side.
Thanks for flying with us. Jordan here. Just wanted to let everyone know what's happening here at the Star Lores podcast. Star Lores is now on Discord. If you would like to join the Star Lores Cantina Discord server, you can find a link in the description or on any of our social media accounts. Reach out with a DM or email. We'd love to hear from you. You can find us on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter by searching the Star Lores podcast. Go ahead and give our page a like and send us a message. You can also email at starlorespodcast@gmail.com. Send us your fan art, Star Wars collections, or fan fictions, and you may even get a feature on one of our pages or even the show. Don't be afraid to offer corrections or add to any of the topics that we discuss on the show. We are also on Patreon. So if you want to help us pay the bills, as well as get a few awesome perks like bonus episodes, access to the private Facebook group, or the VIP section of the Discord server, head on over to patreon.com/StarLores and sign up for as little as $1 a month. And finally, make sure to subscribe to us on your favorite podcatcher app or YouTube, as well as sending us a 5-star review on iTunes. This really helps us reach a wider audience. Enjoy the rest of the show.